Hello and welcome to the Stay at Home School Mom podcast. My name is Ginny Suford. I'm joined by my co-host and good friend, Mary Ellen Barrett. And today we have a guest for you. She's blowing up the Catholic internet with her beautiful book, and I can't wait to dive in. But first, we have to give some attention to our very kind friends at Seton Home Study School. They are our primary sponsor and they make this podcast possible. Seton is the premier Catholic home study school, having been providing books, lesson plans, grading services, guidance counseling for 40 years. They've had graduates attend every major college and university in the United States, including the Ivies and the military academies. And we have several students that have gone into universities overseas as well. Seton partners with the Newman Guide Catholic Colleges to encourage their graduates to continue an authentic Catholic education after homeschooling is over. So anyhow, check out their website at www.setonhome.org. And Mary Ellen, would you be kind enough to introduce our lovely guest?
I'm thrilled to. This is so right up my alley, this book. I'm so excited to meet her. Emily Malloy's floral design career began as an apprentice who swept petals and leaves off the floors of a rapidly growing floral shop in Philadelphia. So she began right there at the bottom of the, I guess the bottom of the tier.
Right on the ground floor, so to speak.
Yeah, she's worked hard. She rose to manager and floral designer. Her work has appeared in Elle Decor, Green Wedding Shoes, National Catholic Register, and the Ember Journal. She is the food and floral design editor at theologyofhome.com, which is just a wonderful website. Please go check it out. She and her husband live in Mississippi with their four lovely children. Congratulations, Emily, on writing a truly beautiful book, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here with you ladies.
We're just really excited. I've loved this whole series of books. I have them all. They are so beautiful and so inspirational and so Catholic, so very Catholic, because we are all about beauty and order and all of those things that God created us for. And so much out there is not about that. So this is truly a wonderful addition to a home library. Now, I saw via your Instagram that you photographed this whole book. I'm constantly on your Instagram because the pictures are so pretty, but you photographed the whole book?
I did, with the exception of maybe two photos that my husband took of me, but yes, it was in-house.
The photography is just beautiful as well. I mean, in addition to the content of the pictures, why isn't photographer on your resume?
Well, I suppose I have a background in food writing and have experience as a food photographer, but this was new for me, kind of branching out into this. But it's very similar in concept as far as food photography is concerned. But yeah, I suppose now I can add that to the Rolodex.
Oh, absolutely.
I was kind of thinking as I looked through the book, and Mary Ellen just said it's a nice addition to our libraries. Actually, I think I'd pop it on the coffee table, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's where they live, in my house.
Yeah, I think this is a coffee table book. I mean, it's just beautiful to look at. And especially this time of year, as we're recording this, it's getting late into the fall and it's cold. And you want to be reminded of God's beauty. Now, when the snow comes down, everybody has their Christmas lights on, you're reminded of it again. Right now is sort of a middle time. Not so nice.
It's true. It's, you know, and these times have become, you know, I kind of call them like a bridge period, you know. Mm-hmm. They've really been bridging in between seasons or times, and they've really become my favorite seasons, because I think that's when we get, surprise isn't the right word, but we're delighted by the unexpected moments of beauty. And at first, you know, as a florist, before I really became a gardener, I didn't really like winter, you know, and late fall, it's cold, there's not so much green. But then I came to realize that there's really unique shades, and the sunlight hits a certain way. And, you know, the beauty of the dried grass, like that caramel tan color, you know, is just absolutely breathtaking. And then as the leaves fall, you can see into the landscape in a way that you weren't able to see before. You can see past the trees, you know, and you can see the little, where the birdies have built their homes and all of that. And I've come to just really love and admire every season, but in a special way, this late autumn period that you're discussing.
I love that. I can look out my window right now and see the pampas grass is getting brown. And then I have 45 hydrangea bushes. alternating white and blue. And now they're all kind of that crusty brown and purple. And it, to me, it's just as pretty as the white and blue is in June. I just love it.
Yeah. I've come to love that more as they kind of dry on the stem. And then eventually, you know, as it snows, if you leave, I love, you know, as I guess kind of rebelling as a gardener a little bit, leaving the heads of the dried hydrangea on. Now in Mississippi, we don't really have snow. If it snows, the world shuts down. But when we lived in Pennsylvania, I would just let it all go. And just watching the snow collect on the heads of the hydrangea is also so beautiful.
Oh, I'm going to have to pay more attention to that. I'm in New York and we definitely have snow. So there's a picture in the book. Now, for those of you who don't have it yet, it's divided by month. And in November, it's a picture of daisies just kind of drying on the stems here. It's both pages. So when you open the book, when I saw this, I was ran out to look at my own daisies in the yard because they really are very autumnal because they're not blooming really. They're starting to dry in the photo, but they're really pretty. Mm-hmm. They're really, really pretty.
When I was a florist, I kind of had this, well, I think I can be perfectly frank. I think we're all friends. I was kind of snobbish, you know, about dried stems, where I thought, at least when I was in the flower shop, the world was my oyster. I could just get flowers. You know, all I had to do was get on the computer and click and get flowers from the Pacific Northwest, from California, from Holland, you know, like anywhere. I could just get flowers from South America. New York, you know, has really great tulips. It just didn't matter. So it was kind of like, well, why would I worry about all that other stuff when there's, you know, much better stuff to be had? And when I left the flower shop and stayed home and realized, okay, well, to fill this hole of arranging in flowers, I really developed gardening. And it was in that process that I developed a real love for the seasons, for what's in the moment. And then I just was like, why was I so, you know, just naive, I think, you know, silly and simple over dried flowers, because my goodness, now that's like half of what I have going in my house. You know, I have a big bin that I bring out once everything is kind of dried that I have collected over the years, and I put them out and they're so beautiful, equally as beautiful, I would argue, as the fresh stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I have this arrangement. It's next to my fireplace. I'll have to move it soon when we start fires going. And it's just a simple basket. And I've taken flowers. There's a bunch of hydrangeas in there from various occasions that we've had. And I've just shoved them in there. So we actually hosted a wedding in our backyard a few years ago. And the bride gave me one of the roses from her bouquet. And I stuck that in there. And roses from the 30th anniversary bouquet my husband sent me. And a boutonniere from my son's high school prom. And so now it's this huge arrangement. And a friend of mine who used to own a floral shop here in town came in a few weeks ago and she said, oh, where did you have that made? It's beautiful. How much did it cost you? I'm like, I'm just shoving stuff in here all the time. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but it's dried in such beautiful colors. Like the roses are still kind of vibrant. And I just love it because everything is a memory in there. It's just
absolutely
memories.
Yeah, it's poetic. It's really beautiful. And it speaks to, you know, the role that flowers have in our lives. You know, they're always there in those important things for proms, for weddings, but also as we grieve, right? You know, they're there at graveside, something sad happens, a lot of times you're sent flowers. Something joyful happens, somebody brings you flowers. And they're just this lovely accompaniment and just pure gift from God the Father. And I just love that you can look at that and then you can just be reminded of those special moments in your life. I think that is so beautiful.
It is. It really is. And you're right. I didn't think of it that way, but they do kind of accompany us on our journey of life. The moments that matter, whether they're happy or sad, there's usually some kind of floral or plant or something that comes with it. And that's really beautiful to think about.
I think flowers too are gifts. One thing where I try to pray, we are all supposed to show gratitude as we pray. I'm an old woman. I have never stopped being grateful to God when I go for a walk on a beautiful day. I just see some black-eyed Susans, or it could be anything, any odd little flower. I am very grateful to God. But I look at, like, I have a statue of the Blessed Mother on my mantle. I have another statue in my garden. And sometimes I'll say, Ma, you like that hydrangea that's next to you? But it's like my little gift to the Blessed Mother. And my son, talk about hydrangeas, has beautiful, like, beautiful hydrangeas. And he has strawberry vanillas. And when they dry up in the winter, I think you're right. They're almost prettier than they are when they're growing. But it's different. And, you know, you were saying that you did a lot of work with food, Emily. Well, we look at our food as seasonal. Like in the spring, we look forward to our nice, fresh green lettuce that we haven't had all winter, you know. But by this time of year, we're looking to have, you know, pumpkins and squash and our fall. So there are seasons. And if we do come to love every season, it makes such a difference in our lives, in our practical lives, but also in our spiritual lives.
Absolutely. And that was the, I think, the surprising thing that I didn't know that I had thought about until I wrote the book. And I had a few aha moments. So I took about 10 months to write the book because in the moment when Carrie pitched the idea to write the book, I recognized that for it to be, and so this is the beauty of, I think, of the theology of home books, as you gals both mentioned, they're lovely coffee table books, right? They're just so great to have there. But unlike most coffee table books, you open them up and there is so much for the soul to get out of there, you know? So it's more than just a coffee table book. But the one thing that I realized as I was writing or getting ready to write this book, when we were sort of going through, Carrie Noel and I going through discussing how this book was going to shape, I knew just like all the other books, it needed to be at its core, really philosophical and theological. And for it to, for a book about the garden to be authentic to that, I made the realization probably within the next 24, 48 hours of the idea being pitched that I should probably be growing everything. So at the time we were renting a house, we had just relocated from Pennsylvania to Mississippi. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I kind of have to start from scratch. You know, if I were in Pennsylvania, I had worked so hard to create a garden and I had to start completely over. So it was raw, like for 10 months, it was the process of planting things, seeing whether or not they're going to work because it's a completely different growing zone, completely different climate. And it was just such a raw process and learning in real time. And so much of that came out on the pages. And since we have since purchased a house since then, and I'm starting over again because I bought a house that really doesn't have a garden at all. And just recognizing what God revealed to me in that 10-month process of growing. And the one aha moment that I think will always stick out to me, it was like midnight, you know, I'm up really late in the middle of the night in one March day, writing in the freezing cold of this, you know, big antebellum home that didn't heat very well. And I just made the realization of how much the garden instructs our spiritual life and emotional life too, because those are fairly well connected. But just this notion of the cyclic nature of nature and the linear progression of our own lives and how this notion of nothing new, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, right? You know, you kind of always come back around to certain things, but the comfort that we find in those rhythms and in those seasons, and as our own life progresses on a linear line, that knowledge that there will be a spring again, right? You know, we're in the autumn of our lives, but, you know, in God's mercy, we're planting seeds that things continue right after we're gone, you know, in his mercy and our children and those in our lives. So it was just this really, just a dumbfounding moment. I think that one night where I thought, oh my gosh, like, of course, God, you order these things this way to inform more than just life in the garden. And I think you can apply it to so many different aspects of our lives. And that's just, you know, God is just, he's such a good father, right? That he would do these things where, you know, as something as simple as getting your fingers dirty in the garden and working with flowers, that it can teach you so much about your own life and who he is as God and who you are as his child. And then how it ripples out from there.
All of that you just said shines through in the essays in this book. It's really, I have a lot of design books because I enjoy looking at beautiful pictures. Who doesn't? And there are certainly many, many beautiful pictures in this book, but this is a design book that you really want to read. Like, you really want to embrace the essays in here. There's a whole lot of practical there's how to make a boutonniere, how to make beautiful bouquets of different types. There's a whole lot of practicality in here, but the spirituality and the philosophy of it just really draws you in and makes you want to encounter beauty outside wherever you can. And that's how I felt after I'd read the book. Like I said, with the daisies, I ran outside to give a better look to my kind of dying on the vine there daisies. Mm. And I sat down and did a big seed order. So I have bulbs coming in the spring. I'm going to try dahlias. I have to put my Bells of Ireland seeds in soon because they have to winter over. Like it really inspired me to create more beauty in my garden. I've been a little haphazard up till now. I have a giant yard. I had the yard that all the kids came to. There was a pool, there was a zip line, there was a climbing thing, there was a swing set. It's all finally gone. Like everybody's too old for that. So now I can garden. And you really inspired me to do that. And not just because I like gardening and I do, and I like flowers, but because I don't know, the way you just said it, it draws you closer to God in a way. And like Ginny said, the cycles of it and everything, you really inspired me. So when you get this book, read the book. Don't just look at the pictures, because the essays, if there were no pictures, the essays are worth reading. Definitely.
Yeah, they are. I found that too. And by the way, the book, did we mention that the title, Theology of the Home 4, Arranging the Seasons?
I'm not sure. Yes, actually, that would have been nice to actually say the title of the book.
Again, Theology of the Home 4, the Roman numeral 4, Arranging the Seasons. Absolutely beautiful book. Gives us a lot to think about. Very profound thoughts, as Emily kind of pointed out, that our lives are kind of like our gardens in many ways. And there is something about sitting in that garden with the sun shining. I like weeding. I like weeding. I've got to be the only person on the planet that enjoys.
You are. Weeding. That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It doesn't bother me even a little bit, because when I finish weeding that row or that section of the garden, and then I look, it's so beautiful.
Mm. Oh yeah. It does create.
And when do you get an hour, and at the end of this hour, you can look back at what you did and say, oh wow, that looks terrific. That's beautiful. Doesn't happen too often. By the way, you spent on seeds. I spent almost $90 on bulbs that I have yet to put in my garden.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It is a little expensive, the bulbs. Do you feel like they went up in price?
They did
like
go
everything,
up in price.
Everything else in the world went up in price. Oh goodness.
You know, the other thing, and before we take a break, I'd just like to point this out that I was thinking about with our gardens too. We're talking here about the beauty of a flower garden, but our vegetable gardens, God gave them to us to sustain us. Mm-hmm. And about 2 years ago, when everything started to go up in price in these grocery stores, and worse than that, I was married for decades, and I walk into a grocery store and there's no carrots or potatoes. Who heard of such? It was so crazy to me as an American. And I said something to my neighbor. Now, I mentioned I live in Kentucky now. I have 10 acres. And I said something to my neighbor about, you know, is this going to go on? Are we going to have shortages of food? I got a little panicky there. And she said, Jenny, we don't have shortages of food down here. I'll send my husband up with his tractor. He'll turn over several acres and we'll plant food. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, what happened? Our gardens can sustain us too. It's not just getting a really good taste of fresh lettuce in the spring.
Right. Absolutely.
Those victory gardens kept people going during the war.
Yeah. And we've walked away from the land in a lot of ways that has left us in that vulnerable place, you know, and I've found in my life, at least, you know, as I'm progressing, in my motherhood and just in my life as a married woman, just that recognition that the Lord gave us the ability to provide for ourselves. And you're right. The point of the garden is to sustain us, right? And we were made for the garden. We were made to toil. We were made to do these things. And there's just something so beautiful where you can see the work of your hands in the garden. But I think at the heart of why farming, gardening, does something within our spirit is a cooperation with God, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much is out of our control, and we have to rely upon him so much in that process that, but he also gives us the gift to be able to do that so that we can nourish ourselves from the ground that he made for us to be on, to have dominion over. So there's something really special about that. And I'm finding as I'm getting older, I am wanting that more for myself and also for my children, this notion that, you know, it doesn't matter what chaos is going on in that world. I mean, it does, but what, you know, the Lord has given us the ability to nourish ourselves right here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I always see when we do, you know, kindergarten science or something and you grow a bean, I would tell the kids, this is miraculous. What is actually happening right here? You know, we have this goofy little bean and then we're going to get this huge plant and it's going to feed us at some point. And I'm still in awe of that, that you can plant a seed and you get a tree or a beautiful flower or something you can eat. It truly is miraculous when you think about it.
And I think the one thing that is so extraordinary is when you make the recognition that from that one seed, you can sustain yourself indefinitely, right? Yeah. So you let it go to seed at one point and you collect for the next year. And in that process, as the seed is acclimating to wherever you live, it's changing so that it can be better adapted to that soil, to the conditions, and it'll do even better the next year. You know, it's just amazing.
It is. Well, we need to take a quick break because what else is amazing is that we have some wonderful sponsors on this podcast and we have to give them a moment to let you know who they are and how you get in touch with them. So we will be right back with Emily Malloy. And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Benedictine College. Benedictine College is a Newman Guide school located in Atchison, Kansas. It is heir to the 1,500 years of Benedictine dedication to learning. Benedictine College mission as a Catholic Benedictine liberal arts residential college is the education of men and women within a community of faith and scholarship. There are over 50 undergraduate programs, 2 master's degree programs, and they are located on a beautiful, beautiful campus. Please check out their website at benedictine.edu for more information about student life, faith life, admissions, financial aid, athletics, and a variety of other things. You can even schedule a visit to the campus on the website. So again, check them out at benedictine.edu. And thank you, Benedictine College, for sponsoring the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast. Thank you for hanging on with us. And thank you to our sponsors. Ginny and I are really, really grateful for the support and all the friends of the podcast that we have. So go check them out at their website. We are here with Emily Malloy, who is the author and photographer of the beautiful new book, Theology of Home 4, Arranging the Seasons. There's a foreword by Carrie Gress and Noelle Maring. If you are familiar with the Theology of Home website, then you know that this is an absolutely stunningly beautiful book. And you should check out theologyofhome.com because there's just great content over there. We are talking with Emily, and this is all about gardening and the beauty that is outside. Now, I did see on your Instagram that you paid a bit of a high price for some of these photographs. You got some poison ivy, did you? Oh, you poor thing. That's horrible.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh. So the house that we rented and I lived in, you know, while this book was being done is a very old home. And I think you can kind of get that sense in the book. Mm-hmm. And I think the poison ivy has to be from back in the Spanish colonial period because it was the most, you know, and I know poison ivy, right? I can see it. I know it. I know to stay away from it.
Three, leave it be.
There's a couple learning curves that happened. So first of all, when I was digging and planting, I was among the roots where the leaves weren't. So I have no idea. So there were a couple of times, and at one point I did sort of like the old Native American thrash and burn, you know, throw seeds and do different things because I didn't know what was there. So I had a bundle of all different kinds of sticks down. And then at one point I was like, you know what? I don't have time. I'm just going to pick it up and carry. And I had carried all the bundles of sticks in my arm. So at one point I had a poison ivy sore from mid bicep to like halfway to my wrist. And it was just one open sore. And a practitioner was like, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this. But you know, there was poison ivy growing out of the gutters. Like
everywhere
I turned, I was like, oh my gosh.
I've never heard of that in this place.
Yeah. It was everywhere.
Crazy. And I didn't know you could get it from the roots. I didn't know that.
Apparently you can. I found a way.
When I was a kid, I was very unique in that I don't get poison ivy. I'm immune to it. And we lived in upstate New York, but an hour north of New York City. And in those days, there were lots of apple orchards there, and the growers would plant poison ivy around the trees to keep people from going in and swiping apples.
Makes sense.
Right. Well, except my friend would say, well, can you go in and throw us an apple? You know, so I have to admit, I was an apple thief when I was a child, and I would go in and throw apples to my friends. Decades later, when I moved to Kentucky, I got my first case of poison ivy.
So yeah, I guess you had been exposed so much. Yeah.
Or it's a different cultivar of some sort down there.
Maybe.
But it did teach it. Maybe it was penance for my sin of swiping apples and my friends. I'm not quite sure. One of the things that really got to me with this book is you homeschool your kids.
I do.
As well as write, as well as photograph, as well as design, as well as garden. All while you're homeschooling. I mean, did the kids get involved in this or did you?
They were. So I did a lot of writing at night. And then the other thing I will say that year we did like a 4-day a week schedule. So then I would have one day that I really could do whatever it was that I needed to do, but they were so much a part of the process as well. There were a handful of arrangements that they did in the book and I photographed them. So that was really cool. Special, yeah. For me. And I feature at least one of their faces in the whole process because they're the impetus behind all of it to begin with. Why I think beauty is important for them, for their sake, for their souls and for finding God in that, but also, as a nod for how much, you know, they worked at this too. But it was a lot of late nights, a lot of coffee. So if you look at the stock of coffee and, you know, there was probably a huge surge in demand for coffee during 2021 2021 when I wrote the book, 2022, I should say. So it was a lot of late nights. And we adapted our overall school year and made it a little bit longer, you know, through the Thursday, you know, Monday through Thursday. And then Fridays are really my day to try to get things done.
That's really, that's really smart. That's a smart homeschool mom decision. And Ginny and I often talk about this. By the way, the children are beautiful. They're the prettiest thing in the book. this little guy in the red overalls in the tree. I think he's adorable, but smart homeschool mom decision is to make the homeschool work for your family and where you are in life at that moment. So you have this beautiful book that you want to write. You have so much to share. Maybe it's a passion of yours. You don't have to put that on hold and say, I have to wait until my little one's 18 or 14 or whatever. You can just adapt the homeschool to fit where you are. So you did 4-day work week and you went a little longer. Maybe you do, you know, year round school or something. So mom can actually feed that creativity and work on the things that are important to her while still caring for her family and doing all the other things that we need to do. I think that's a really, really good point for you to make.
Yeah. And there's also just seasons to life anyway, right? You have busy seasons where you kind of have to adapt. And then you have like hidden life seasons, right? Where, you know, you can just entrench yourself in that and nothing else, right? So it's just about, you know, seeing where God is calling you in that moment and responding to it. And he gives you the grace to do what he's asking of you.
Right. Yes. And clearly he was asking you to do this because you got it all done.
Give people lots of joy.
Yes. Yeah.
What I like to say to young moms too, from a different perspective, you know, looking back on it, is we live a long time now. And the day will come when no matter how much you love your children and how much they love you, they're going to say, bye, mom, see you Sunday. And out they go. So it is, you know, you don't have to give up your life to raise your kids.
No. And also that, you know, at simultaneously, they are what make life life, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that's what it is, right? Life is a series of relationships and it's super important to foster that.
Yeah. Now, before we let you go, because we could go on all day here, but we realize people have limits on their time. Gardening, like we were just talking about before, gardening can get expensive. I mean, if you, depending on where you buy things and how you buy things and how you want to start off. I imagine that you're a seed saver kind of a person. Do you do that kind of thing? Like, how do you make it a little bit more affordable rather than just go to the garden center and spend thousands of dollars on all the things you want?
Yeah, I had to be perfectly honest. So my gardening journey was a very frugal one. When I started becoming a stay-at-home mom, my husband gave me a budget of $50 a year to build a garden. I thought,
wow,
oh my,
you spend it all in one place?
Do this. Yeah, basically. So it forced a creativity. So it was understanding that I had to do a lot from seed, which, you know, isn't a huge investment, but you have to be super patient in that process. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing I came to recognize, which I think it's a regional thing because I haven't been able to benefit from it since moving. But I would make use of that end of the season sale in things. So I've gotten extremely, speaking of the vanilla strawberry, I just like, and you say that and like, I start going into a mourning period because I left that behind when we moved. It was just like, oh, the most scrumptious thing. Well, I can start over, right? And that's what I've been doing. But keeping to that mind of frugality and how expensive things are, but I would make the recommendation of going to these different garden centers, you know, August, September, even now, you know, a lot of things, they just continually get marked down. And if they're perennials and they seem to be in good shape, you can absolutely plant them. I was a trash picker. I will be perfectly honest. After Mother's Day, after Easter, when we lived in a town and we would just go for a walk and I would see people would just throw that, you know, shiny paper thing with the dead tulip, leaves and whatnot on the side of the road. And I thought, well, I can put that in the ground. So I would do that. Or, you know, apparently I've heard tell, so a priest friend of mine had said, well, go to this, since we've been down here, go to this shop downtown, you know, he'll have a display of amaryllis and whatever other bulbs and whatever doesn't sell, he kind of just throws in the compost bin. And I was like, oh my gosh, I should make use of that. But it's just, you know, it is a big investment. And I know that, and I feel that in my bones. And for the first time with this house, we put a lot of money aside to do foundational planting because there wasn't much of a gutter system and we could see, you know, that it would benefit from having a lot of plants. So that's when I, for the first time in a long time, bought a lot of established plants because I wanted that root system. Yeah. And we've had a drought, a really extreme drought
where this year.
It's still going on. We have the red flag warnings, you know, and I've lost most of it, you know, and that's been like a really hard, humbling process, but just the recognition. But I think it also having that recognition that it could go belly up, right? So buy the seeds. That's what I would say. But, you know, but we also had well trouble, I should say. So there was a lot of time where I couldn't irrigate the gardens to make sure that it kept going. And it was just a really interesting process of the Lord being like, nope, you know, that wasn't what I had in mind. And guess what? You're going to learn from this failure and you're going to move on and do it differently next time. So I wouldn't allow yourself to be afraid at the cost, especially, you know, when seeds make it available. Now, of course, with tubers and those kinds of things and bulbs, you know, that's more of an investment. But the beauty about that is if you start really small, it you can divide them in the future and it grows. Right. So it might not look
like
much.
Like an iris, you really have to divide.
Right.
One of the things I found moving from New York, and then I lived in Chicago and then Kentucky, first of all, plants that sort of grew nicely in Chicago became the plant that ate Cleveland when I moved to Kentucky. And so one thing I did notice is you can divide your plants. Like I had a spiderwort plant. I don't know where I got it from. But you can divide that blessed thing like every year practically down there.
Absolutely.
I had iris. You can divide iris all the time. Things grow much differently. Purple ajuga, some people call it bugle flower.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty little ground cover. In Chicago, it would grow a little bit. Holy mackerel, it like takes over an acre down there. So you can just move it and replant it. If you make buddies, another really good, if you find a few ladies at your church that really like to garden, make buddies with them because they're looking to divide their stuff too.
Yeah, and yes, absolutely. Yeah.
That's how I got all my hosta plants was divided by friends. We're always sharing hosta plants because they're good. They, you know, they get big and they're pretty and they cover a lot of space. Yeah.
Absolutely. And they grow in the shade.
Yeah. In Pennsylvania, I had a lot of that. I would get them from my mom and I would get, you know, there was a big, I lived in this small suburb outside of Philadelphia, Havertown, and there was like a really active gardening group, and people would divide and do all of that. And then the other thing I would do was I would go to the Amish farms, because they grew everything from seed. You know, they don't have a ton of overhead. So those garden centers, man, that $50 went really far when I made that discovery. But like you said, it's an investment in the future that, God willing, you know, as long as everything with nature, you know, is good, will be there for years to come. So, you know, it's having that patience of knowing, and I'm relearning it again, even though, you know, I'm so many years into this process of gardening, but just those subtle reminders that it might not look like the way you want it to look now, or maybe even next season, but just have that patience, right? Like you would, that you cultivate that patience in the whole process. And eventually it will be that fantastic, you know, established garden that's really full. You know, you just have to do the work, you know, weed the rows, do those things, and just sit and know that it will come.
Yeah. And gardeners are the most generous of people I have found. I belong to this Facebook group. It's Facebook. It's the Gardeners of Lindenhurst, where I live. Mm-hmm. And you know, Facebook can be awful. People are just terrible there. But this group, everybody is always saying, oh, I have this. I have too many of these. Do you want this? Oh, look, I got potatoes from a free potato tubers. I got all kinds of plants. And people are just exchanging it left and right. And it is the one group on Facebook where everybody is just pleasant and happy and generous and thoughtful and encouraging. And my experience with people who garden a lot is that they just tend to be like that more. And I think part of that is just they're patient. Mm-hmm. They've learned to wait things out, and they have a kind of serenity to them, because you just have to when you're gardening. You can't expect, you know, you don't plant something and expect beauty 10 minutes later. Sometimes mm-hmm. you wait years for it to be beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big antidote against, you know, the instant gratification that we have in this world.
Yes. Yeah. It really, really is. It's
also a lot of beauty to be found, like old things. Like I haven't done it yet, but I've seen people that'll take an old pot that broke and and then they sort of have like the flowers spilling out of the side of it. It looks beautiful. Mm. And that's not an expensive thing to do. That's dirt cheap. Or take the old wagon that your son used to use years ago, and now he's grown up, but you make that into a planter. There's all sorts mm-hmm. of cool stuff you can do with what you have on hand. I love marigolds. It's Mary's gold, right?
Yes.
It's Mary's gold. I have both the French marigolds and the African marigolds.
Oh, wow.
And I have certain cultivars that I just think are beautiful. Like I love the ones that are sort of orange with the brown centers. I mean, really beautiful ones. Mm-hmm. So through the years, I've kind of refined the seeds that I saved.
Yes. And I'm sure, you know, the two plants, you know, in the pollination process are probably creating really interesting new varieties.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. So a real blessing. We've kept you long enough, though. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so
Mary Ellen and I, we have a horrible habit. I'm sure our guests hate us, talk about us behind our back because we just go on and on and on. But you have been a delight. Thank you so much.
Yes, really have been.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a wonderful way to spend my morning.
Oh, that's so kind. So listeners, you can go to theologyofhome.com and buy this beautiful book and check out the other offerings. They have, this is number 4, so there's 1 through 3. It's also published by Tan Books, so you can probably get it on their website. Check out Theology of Home. Check out all of Emily's work. This book is just lovely. And there's a lot of poetry in the book, which also made me as a writer very, very happy. John Donne, In the Autumn, my favorite season and my favorite poet right there. So thanks again. And we want to thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School, for providing us all of the support. Our engineer, Jason Lowry, our social media designer is Robin Hibble, and our show notes and help with all of that kind of stuff is Jim Shanley. Thanks again, Emily. Good luck with the book, and we hope you'll be writing more.
Yes, thank you.
God bless you and your family.
Oh, thank you so much.
And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School. Seton Home Study School is a nationally accredited, faithfully Catholic, private distant learning school that serves students from pre-K through 12th grade.
There are currently 17,000 homeschool students enrolled in Seton Home Study School, and many, many more who use their books and materials, including several small Catholic schools. Since 1983, Seton Home Study School has faithfully served the homeschool community in the United States and all over the world. Please check out their website, setonhome.org, for more information. And thank you, Seton Home Study School, for sponsoring the podcast, The Stay-at-Home Schooling Moms.